History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And they don't have to go untold, as long as we're willing to ask a few questions and take the time to listen. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in that process, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we end up inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Some of these memories just grab you when you try to put yourself in their shoes. When we hear from someone who was a prisoner of war, somebody who was wounded, someone who experienced a close call, or just has a unique way of reshaping our perspective. How about jumping off of a sinking ship blindly while trying to hold your wounded eye in place with a towel? That's something that was happening 80 years ago this week in the Battle of the Santa Cruz Islands. The ship was the aircraft carrier USS Hornet, CV-8, the historic carrier that had launched the Doolittle Raid just 6 months earlier, that had then valiantly endured the pivotal Battle of Midway, in which every single plane from Torpedo Squadron 8 aboard the Hornet was lost, with all but one man from that squadron sacrificing his life for our country. On October 26, 1942, in the Battle of the Santa Cruz Islands, while planes from the Hornet were damaging enemy carriers, Japanese planes scored hit after hit on the historic ship, which would end up on the bottom of the ocean, never to be seen again until 2019, when the research vessel Petrel discovered the wreckage nearly 2 miles deep. We're going to hear from someone whose locker still holds some keepsakes within that sunken carrier, a man who lost 140 shipmates that day 80 years ago and nearly lost his own life. But first, we're going to hear a few other perspectives that lead us into the Hornet's final moments. You've heard me mention before on this program the USS Hornet Sea Air and Space Museum in Alameda, California. That's a different carrier, CV-12, that inherited the Hornet name after the CV-8 was sunk. But the Hornet Museum is a great place to visit and learn some of the history of the CV-8. As is the USS Midway Museum in San Diego, which has an incredible display on the Battle of Midway. Midway is where Torpedo Squadron 8 met its fate, and St. George Gay was famously the sole survivor of all those who flew off the Hornet that day in that squadron. But here on Hometown Heroes, we heard from another member of Torpedo Squadron 8. Eddie Fail would go on to earn the Navy Cross later in the war. He had witnessed Doolittle's B-25s take off 6 weeks earlier, praying for those Army Air Corps pilots that he'd been playing cards with aboard the Hornet. His prayers would take on another focus in the hospital in Hawaii after he injured himself in a freak accident just before the Hornet left for Midway.
So they put me in the hospital, and the next day the squadron took off and went to the Battle of Midway. A few days later, I'm still in the hospital recovering. George Gay come walking into the room. And of course I had heard about the Battle of Midway that was all over the scuttlebutt. So I said, gee, George, I'm sorry I missed it. And he said, don't be sorry. I'm the only one that's left. That kind of shook me a little.
I could see that.
But as I said before, I think I would have made it back.
How hard was that? Because, you know, we hear that story and we say, boy, all those planes go down. His plane went down. No one knew he survived till he came out of the water after all those hours. But to know that all those men that you had trained with for all that time were not coming back.
That kind of hit hard.
Did that change at all your perspective on the war, the enemy, or what you were doing there?
No, not really. It was just, it's like losing a lot of friends that you, it's more than friends, almost like family. I mean, we've been together for 6 months.
And did Ensign Gay give you an account of what he'd been through?
Yeah.
What he'd witnessed? What do you remember about what he shared and what impact that
had? Well, he was telling me when He went in the water. He was telling me some what he saw, actually. So the skipper, who was flying ahead of him, it looked like if the skipper was trying to get out of his plane. Like, you know, if he was going to bail out, but it was not a question of bailing out. He was flying right off the water, so we don't know what happened.
I don't want to do our listeners a disservice here. I've heard the story of Midway from people that were there, but maybe a lot of the listeners haven't. When you're flying one of these TBDs, can you explain to us what your job would be in a situation like that where there are Japanese ships that you're attacking? How would you attack those ships?
Well, you would try to get ahead of them, for one thing, and try to get a bow shot. 30-degree angle is about ideal. Trying to get close to the water and drop your torpedo close enough to the ship so that not too close, because the torpedo has to arm itself. There's a little prop in front of the thing that uncovers the contact point. So ideally, you're dropping your torpedo 100 feet from the ship.
And how far above the water are you?
20 feet at most.
So you dive down far before you get to the ship. Yeah. You're flying parallel to the water, right, releasing your torpedo, and then hoping that somehow all those guns on those ships don't take you down.
Well, they continue shooting at you.
I mean, I'm sure people listening to that are like, well, that's ridiculous. Of course you're going to get shot down with the speed that those planes were flying. Then not to mention all the aircraft from the enemy, all those Zeros who had more horsepower and could go faster. It really wasn't a fair fight, was it, at Midway?
Well, it's a fair fight. I mean, you take your chances when you're at war. There's no question about it. Well, let's put it this way. I would rather be a fighter.
Mm-hmm. And what does that say about those men who died that day, that they carried out that job, despite what I'm sure they knew were difficult odds?
They were brave men. All the people that fought the war were brave.
Did it take you a while to get over that?
Yes.
Have you gotten over it yet?
Well, I've gotten over it as much as I don't think about it all the time, but when I think of it, it still catches me.
That's what Eddie Fail said in 2015. He passed away 3 years later at the age of 97, and now he is buried at Arlington National Cemetery. Fail was not on the Hornet when it was sunk 80 years ago this week, because after Midway, he was transferred to the USS Saratoga, from whose deck he took off for the mission that earned him the Navy Cross in August of 1942. You can link to his complete original interview at hometownheroesradio.com, as well as the memories of Al Bloomer, who was not on the Hornet, but on the USS Enterprise in the same task force. He too had witnessed Jimmy Doolittle and those B-25s take off in April. He too had survived Midway. And his perspective helps us feel just how intense the Battle of the Santa Cruz Islands was. This was not a battle where ships were firing at each other, but planes from American and Japanese carriers targeted each other's ships. And Al thought the Battle of the Santa Cruz Islands 80 years ago this week might be his last. Even though he was using brand new guns as a result of the Enterprise's repairs and upgrades after Midway.
We got repaired, and well, we got those new 40 millimeters. You know, those quad mounts, they could shoot 500 rounds per minute, and they put those on to replace the old 1.1s. We thought, well, it was good, and then we had the all-new 20s. They added some on, put a whole row of them alongside of the flight deck, the side of the superstructure. On the side there, we used to stack up those boats. Okay, we're getting ready, and the old officer in charge of the flight deck said, get all those planes off that flight deck. Get them off. Well, there's someone with an armed refuse. I don't give a damn. Get them off that flight deck. We don't want no aircraft on that flight deck starting fires and that. Pretty soon they get a report, oh, they're 100 miles out coming. And then here again, they go, oh, 75 miles out coming in, getting 50 miles. Then they give us a position. And here I am on this 5-inch, and they're kind of me in the stern. So I'm bringing the old 5-inch gun around like that. And I look up, and here they come right at me. First two releases of the bomb, and they were headed straight for me. And I said, oh, dear old Al, you're not getting out of this one. This is it. There ain't no way that you're going to live through this one. Those two bombs come down, and they just barely missed the splinter shield. They exploded. That raised that old bow up, and shook it, and the water knocked me out. The water came down and brought me back, made me feel shaken. And then what I didn't know, there was two more dive bombers coming behind it. One came down, we went off between the two gun galleys by the number one elevator and exploded down in the third and fourth deck and just cleaned that all out. The next one went out the side of the flight deck outside of the ship and exploded. That was the closest call I had the whole time I was on the Navy. The bow was taking on water down there where the percussion pushed in part of the hull and was leaking, and they were trying to get it under control. But we still launched the aircraft and everything and repeat them, but we couldn't use our number one elevator. We were stacked by 83 aircraft. That lasted 55 minutes, and they launched 10 torpedoes at us, and we dodged them all. That ship could turn on a dime. As big as it was, it could really turn. Let me tell you.
Well, it's a good thing, or else you wouldn't be here, and it sounds like you almost weren't here. First, I'll help us understand, when you're sitting in that trainer position, what's around you? Are you sitting in a chair with your eyes on this scope, or what do you...
They put open sights on them.
Okay.
Yeah, the director can't move fast enough to get dive bombers or anything.
Uh-huh.
It's just open sights deal, and you just shoot the hope the hell that you hit something.
I'm just wondering, so just physically as you're sitting there, what's around you?
Well, the first is a gun here, mm-hmm. and then right there is the sight of it. Right beside you is where it's part of the gun mount.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And the sight setter, he's behind me up here. He stands up and works the sights for the gun on my side. And the pointer is on the other side. He's the one that fires it.
Right.
And they got the loader and the sheller on that side, too, and they load it.
So you're all in this together, and you see these bombs coming, what it feels like is right at you. And then you were actually knocked unconscious?
Well, yeah, I was out there. I didn't know anything until the water hit me. I guess so. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this water splashes all the way up to where you are.
Yeah, it comes down.
Covers you.
Yeah, it going up like that and comes down. The side of the ship comes that kind of out like that, and we just kind of like in a hole there. Yeah, but the gun sits out in the, when they open. This air, also at this same time, it was kind of cloudy that day, too. And this one time, this dive bomber looked over at him, and here he's diving at the South Dakota was on our starboard side. It real close to you. He released his bomb, and I seen him hit the number two turret and explode. It bounced off, exploded, and killed some guys on the bridge in that, on the South Dakota.
Well, and on your ship in that Battle of the Santa Cruz Islands, I believe I read about 44 men were killed.
Oh, yeah.
And then the same battle, the Hornet is sunk, and you guys end up picking up a lot of their survivors, right?
Oh, well, they transferred them. We didn't pick them up. They transferred some of them to us, replaced the ones that got killed on our ship. Yeah.
And another thing I read once about your ship, and I don't know if you saw it or if you heard about it, but because now in the Pacific, you know, the Yorktown was sunk at Midway, now the Hornet is sunk in this battle. The Enterprise is the only carrier left in the Pacific, and I heard someone put a sign on your ship that said, Enterprise versus Japan?
You're right, yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah, they showed it to us. After the Santa Cruz there, you know, there's a lot of happened there. They detached the battleships from us, and they went down there and doodled it out down there at Guadalcanal there. And of course, they thought that they all conquered, I mean, all destroyed and that. And then they relieved us. We went back to New Caledonia there to a repair ship there, trying to see if they could get the elevator working and patch up some of the holes that they could get reached to. The battleships, they went down there and they had that big duel with the other, and they sunk one battleship down there, and the South Dakota and the Washington was in it too, and then they depatched the ones that the AA cruiser, 5-inch cruiser, that the Sullivan brothers was on down there with them. All they were supposed to be is to protect us because of their thin hull, and that's when they all got killed down there. And so, one of the things, too, that we had brothers on our ship there, and they said, we're going to transfer. And no two brothers can be on the ship at the same time.
After the five Sullivan brothers went down on the Juno?
Yes, that's right.
Well, I've got to ask you, Al, and I know this seems cliche, or maybe it's, you know, an obvious question, but I'm sure it's something that you considered at some point. When you're seeing all this happen around you, you're seeing these other massive carriers sunk, you know, guys off your own ship have died. How about you? Were you concerned that might happen to you? Were you afraid? What was your mindset?
Well, you know, before your battle, you get that kind of a nervous stomach. before because, you know, it can happen to you. But, you know, after you once get started firing and everything, you forget all that stuff. You just do what you got to do and fire your gun and hope the heck that you make it. I don't know how to explain it to be truthful, but you always wonder about it.
A pretty vivid perspective on the Battle of the Santa Cruz Islands 80 years ago this week. And we get another from Geb Galley, a Pearl Harbor survivor who was there at the Battle of the Santa Cruz Islands aboard the cruiser USS Northampton. Little did he know he would soon be surviving the sinking of that cruiser, the Northampton, but on October 26, 1942, after the Hornet was pounded by Japanese bombs and a kamikaze hit, it was the Northampton that actually took the giant carrier into tow.
He took it into tow, and then, of course, I mean, he had to be approaching her, so we had to cut loose. So he couldn't stay tied to her, so we got out and maneuvered and dodged planes.
So you guys put a line on it. You're towing it, but you make yourselves vulnerable.
We cut loose, and then, of course, she went down. We picked up some of the survivors. In our travels after later on, my mother and I, we were traveling. I ran into a guy down in California. He had a bunch of tattoos on his arms. I made a comment. I said, U.S. Navy? He said, yeah. He said, so what were you on? He said, the Hornet. Yeah. I said, you took your guys in tow. And he said, what were you? I said, Northampton. Well, you're the guys that picked me up. I mean, years later, I ran into guys that were in the same conditions as you were. We were towing the Hornet, the Japanese torpedo plane, and it made its run. They came up between us and the Hornet. They were, I would say, from here to the cabinet. I mean, they were that close.
Like 20 feet?
Yeah. I could see the white of their eyes.
Wow.
And they were smiling.
Were you smiling?
Well, I probably gave it a toothpaste smile.
That's why you guys had to cut them loose, because you were too vulnerable.
The period that they dropped, they got the Hornet or not, I don't know. I assume they did. And, of course, we had to cut loose. We were a perfect target because we were dead in the water.
Ultimately, Admiral Bull Halsey would give the order to sink the Hornet, but American forces couldn't quite finish their own ship off, and the Japanese finally did. And when we come back, we're going to hear from one of the last guys from that crew of 2,200 to escape the Hornet, one of the last survivors from that fateful day 80 years ago. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.